Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of PPL Electric Utilities Corporation, I would like to thank you for your interest in the RFPs under PPL Electric's default service program. My name is Benjamin Chi from Near Economic Consulting and serving as the RFP manager for the default service RFP. Together with the RFP team, we will provide you in this presentation information related to the RFP requirements and how you can participate in the RFPs. We will start on page 2 or slide 2 with a disclaimer. The default service program is pursuant to a filing made by PPL Electric, filed with the Pennsylvania Public Utility Commission, which has been approved by the Commission. The governing documents will include the Commission's order dated December 17, 2020, as well as PPL Electric's default service program petition. And this is in docket number P-2020-3019356. The RFPs will also be governed by the default service RFP process and rules document, as well as the supplier master agreement or the default service SMA. You can find these governing documents on the procurement website ppldsp.com. Again, DSP for the default service program. So, on this presentation and the call that we have, any statements that we make that describe or refer to the documents and agreements are summaries only and are qualified in their entirety by our reference to these documents and agreements. For today's agenda, I will take a minute to talk about the scope of this particular presentation. We will then provide you an overview of the RFP process, discuss the product in detail, and then walk you through the RFP requirements and timeline generally. We will close out this presentation with RFP website information as to how you can find more information about this RFP. Over on to slide 5. Here you will see that the default service program, what we call DSP-5, is made up of various RFPs, and the default service RFP in particular is really a series of 8 solicitations or 8 RFPs for full requirements service between April 2021 and October 2024. Across these RFPs, the requirements are more or less the same. And over on to slide 6, here we want to point out to you that this presentation is a general presentation that goes through the RFP requirements and the steps in the RFP. On our website, ppldsp.com, you'll find another more detailed presentation that is focused on solicitation-specific deadlines and updates. So the more solicitation-specific presentation is provided at the start of each solicitation. You can find that as the screenshot shows here on slide 6. When you click on ppldsp.com, the website on the left navigation bar, you will find default service RFP, and underneath that is a link called documents. And information related to the specific solicitation can be found in each of those solicitation specific sites. Over on to slide 7, NERA serves as the RFP manager for these solicitations or this particular RFP, default service RFP, and our role is the same throughout these solicitations. It is to be the main point of contact for your questions and provide you information. To ensure that the RFP rules are followed and information that we receive, they are evaluated equitably and fairly. To ensure conforming bids and to select the lowest cost combination and present the results to the Pennsylvania Public Utility Commission. With that, I will turn the time to the rest of the RFP team, starting with Ms. Julie Reventis to provide us with an overview of the RFP process. Ms. Reventis?
Thank you for the introduction, Ben. So next, I will go over an overview of the RFP process. The first item that I will talk about is the default service product and the default service customers. Default service customers are retail customers that do not purchase electric supply from an electric generation supplier or EGS. PPL Electric, as an electric distribution company, is obligated to obtain supply for its default service customers, and that is the purpose of this default service RFP. Lastly, the residential customer group's retail rates for default service supply will incorporate the prices of the block product. So, just to be clear, there are three groupings of these default service customers. There is the residential customer group, the small commercial and industrial customer group, and the large commercial and industrial customer group. There is a more detailed breakdown of the customer group rate schedules in section 1.1.3 of the default service RFP process and rules, which are posted on the PPL RFP website. So, moving on to slide 11, we get into the overview of each customer group's procurement structure, starting with the residential customer group. Each solicitation will be seeking two products. We have a 12-month product and a 6-month product in the residential customer group. The 12-month product will be for 40% of the load, and the 6-month product will be for 20% of the load. This will be a recurring theme that you will see in each solicitation. The contracts that are being procured or secured in each solicitation are meant to replace the contracts that are due to expire. The supply period for April solicitations will begin June 1st of the same year, and the supply period for October solicitations will begin on December 1st of the same year. So, moving on to slide 12, we provide the procurement structure for the small C&I customer group. And the small C&I customer group works pretty similarly. We have two products, the 6-month and the 12-month products. And the difference in the small C&I customer groups are the percentages that we are going out for. And these are laid out in more detail here on slide 12. So, moving on to slide 13, we provide the breakdown for the large C&I customer group procurement structure. This procurement overview is pretty straightforward. We are looking for 12-month products for 100% of the default service load. These procurements will be held in April of each year only, so they will only be held once a year. And the one thing to note is that it is different about the large C&I procurement product is that it is full for requirement service with energy priced to the real-time spot market. For each solicitation, there are three main steps that interested parties will need to complete in order to participate. The first step is to submit the bidder qualification through the online qualification form by noon Eastern on the bidder qualification due date. Step two is for qualified bidders to then provide bid assurance collateral in the form of either a letter of credit or cash and the supplier master agreement, again by 12 p.m. noon on the bid assurance collateral and SMA due date. The third step is for bidders to provide their bid proposal spreadsheets, which will be due between 10 a.m. and 12 p.m. Eastern on the bid proposal's due date. So, just as a reminder, this presentation goes over items that are consistent between solicitations. To check on specific dates for a given solicitation, please go to the calendars page on the PPL RFP website, and we actually provide the calendar page at the bottom of this slide 14. The RFP manager will then submit a report to the PUC one business day after the bid proposal's due date, and the PUC will issue a decision for all proposals no later than 2 business days after the bid proposal due date. Two items to note are the following. So, the PUC may render its decision for each product in its entirety. So, for example, in a given solicitation, the PUC may choose to accept the results for the 6-month residential product, but reject the results for the 12-month residential product in its entirety. And then the second item that I would like to note is that if the PUC does not render its decision in the affirmative by close of business on the date that is 2 business days after the bid proposal due date, the results of the RFP will be deemed to be approved. So on slide 16, we go over the rate translation for each of the customer groups. The rates for default service customers will be based on the RFP bid prices. More specifically, for residential customers, the rate will be based on full requirements price contracts, the long-term block product, and the AAC-only contracts from DSP-5. For the small CNI customer group, the rate is based on the full requirements fixed price contract and the AAC-only contracts from DSP-5. And lastly, for the large CNI customer group, the rate is based on the full requirements spot market contracts and the AAC-only contracts that are being procured in DSP-5. Additionally, the rates will also include loss factor adjustments, gross receipts tax, transmission service charge, and state tax adjustment surcharges. So in the next section of the presentation, I will be talking about the product design in more detail. So in this default service RFP, there are two components about the product that you need to keep in mind. And these are, firstly, that it is for full requirements, and secondly, that it is load following. So first, the supply is for full requirements service. That means that it includes energy, capacity, ancillary services, certain transmission services, and some other required products and services. In this DSP-5 program, the service excludes renewable obligations under the AEPS Act and certain non-market-based transmission services. When we say that full requirements services includes certain transmission services, these are defined in the supplier master agreement. They are meant to exclude responsibilities of PPL Electric, who will take on the NITS, or the network integration transmission services, transmission enhancement costs, along with a few other costs that are explained clearly in the SMA. You will receive auction revenue rights, or ARRs, that are associated with the FPR auction in PJM, and these are allocated to winning suppliers. We are also providing on this slide the delivery point, which is the PPL underscore residual underscore aggregate load zone. So as I mentioned earlier, full requirements service is load following. This means that you are not supplying a fixed megawatt block of energy. Instead, you are responsible for a fixed percentage, otherwise known as a tranche, of default service load for a particular customer group during a 6-month or a 12-month supply period. The fixed percentage will be tied to the number of tranches that you have won. And this load follows the load of default service customers. And just as a reminder, default service customers are free to switch out of default service or back into default service with appropriate notice to PPL Electric. So on slide 19, we go over the payment for each product. So one key item to keep in mind is that whether you are serving load for the residential customer group, the small CNI customer group, or the large CNI customer group, you are providing the same service. The difference rests on how you are going to get paid for that service. As described in the previous slide, you are going to be providing full requirements load following service. For the residential and small CNI customer groups, you're going to be getting paid the bid price, which is an all-in price for your settlement volume, which is based on the hourly loss rated load, and you're going to be paid based on a dollar per megawatt hour basis for that load. For the large CNI customer group, you're going to be paid as follows. So you will be paid for your energy at the price that it is paid that is tied to the PJM real-time spot market. You will be paid for your capacity at the RPM price, and you will be paid the rest of the components not associated with energy or capacity, which will include ancillary services, congestion costs, supply margin, at a fixed price, which will be your bid price on a dollar per megawatt hour basis. On slide 20, we refer to the default service load as residual load, and this especially affects the residential customer group. If you think of the load used by residential customers, you first have to take out the load served by EGSs. That will get you to what is physically known as the default service load. On top of that, for the residential customer group, PPL Electric has a long-term contract with the Allegheny Electric Cooperative for capacity and energy from the New York Power Authority, and this is also known as the NYPA supply. You need to take out the NYPA supply from the load to get the residual load. And then NYPA contract and historical data are available on the RFP website. The second item that needs to get removed is the long-term block supply, which PPL Electric has bought through the default service block supply RFP in the quantities and time periods laid out here on slide 20. So to reiterate, you'll have to reduce the load by this NYPA and block supply to get the residual load that you are following. And just as a reminder, this long-term product applies only to the residential customer group. So moving on to slide 21, I will go over the load caps for the default service RFP. A load cap refers to the maximum number of tranches an RFP bidder can bid on. So there are two types of load caps. The first one is an 85% solicitation load cap based on the number of tranches in each solicitation. And this means that you cannot bid on more than 85% of the available tranches. The second type of load cap is a 50% aggregate load cap, which is based on the percentage of default service load served for a customer group by an RFP bidder at any point in time. This load applies to residential and small CNI customer groups, so not to the large CNI customer group. And this limit on tranches bid in a given solicitation will take into account the percentage of load associated with tranches won by the RFP bidder in prior full requirements RFPs. So the default service RFP has a standard supplier master agreement, or SMA, that has been approved by the commission. The contract will be between a winner of the RFP and PPL Electric, and the contract is non-negotiable, and you must agree to the terms of the SMA prior to submission of the bids. In order to qualify, the RFP bidder uploads a partially executed SMA prior to bid submission. Then transaction confirmations will be populated and completed after the bid process, and the transaction confirmation will specify for winning bidders the product information for the tranches won. So the transaction confirmations will include information such as the price, the delivery term, and the tranches won. For key contract credit provisions, there will be a mark-to-market methodology in play. PPL Electric will grant to suppliers an unsecured credit line based on the credit information provided by the bidder itself or the guarantor through its tangible net worth and credit ratings. Any exposure based on the mark-to-market methodology that exceeds the unsecured credit line granted must be met with cash or a letter of credit. And to be granted an unsecured credit line based on your guarantor's credit or tangible net worth, then you need to ensure that you have an acceptable guarantee in place with PPL Electric. So more information about the specific methodologies to be used are explained in Appendix B to the default service SMA. So moving on to slide 24, there is going to be a single unsecured credit for those of you who have won in previous solicitations for which delivery is still ongoing. Exposures are netted across all SMAs, and there is one single guarantee that is used for all SMAs. Additionally, the standard guarantee and the performance assurance letters of credit forms are provided as exhibits to the contract. So next, I'll pass it on to my colleague, Christian Park, and he'll cover the steps of qualification in further detail. Thank you for the introduction, Ben. So next, I will go over an overview of the RFP process. The first item that I will talk about is the default service product and the default service customers. Default service customers are retail customers that do not purchase electric supply from an electric generation supplier or EGS. PPL Electric, as an electric distribution company, is obligated to obtain supply for its default service customers, and that is the purpose of this default service RFP. Lastly, the residential customer group's retail rates for default service supply will incorporate the prices of the block product. So just to be clear, there are three groupings of these default service customers. There is the residential customer group, the small commercial and industrial customer group, and the large commercial and industrial customer group. There is a more detailed breakdown of the customer group rate schedules in section 1.1.3 of the default service RFP process and rules, which are posted on the PPL RFP website. So moving on to slide 11, we get into the overview of each customer group's procurement structure, starting with the residential customer group. Each solicitation will be seeking two products. We have a 12-month product and a 6-month product in the residential customer group. The 12-month product will be for 40% of the load, and the 6-month product will be for 20% of the load. This will be a recurring theme that you will see in each solicitation. The contracts that are being procured or secured in each solicitation are meant to replace the contracts that are due to expire. The supply period for April solicitations will begin June 1st of the same year, and the supply period for October solicitations will begin on December 1st of the same year. So moving on to slide 12, we provide the procurement structure for the small C&I customer group. And the small C&I customer group works pretty similarly. We have two products, the 6-month and the 12-month products. And the difference in the small C&I customer groups are the percentages that we are going out for. And these are laid in more detail here on slide 12. So moving on to slide 13, we provide the breakdown for the large C&I customer group procurement structure. This procurement overview is pretty straightforward. We are looking for 12-month products for 100% of the default service load. These procurements will be held in April of each year only, so they will only be held once a year. And the one thing to note is that it is different about the large C&I procurement product is that it is full FERC requirement service with energy priced to the real-time spot market. For each solicitation, there are three main steps that interested parties will need to complete in order to participate. The first step is to submit the bidder qualification through the online qualification form by noon Eastern on the bidder qualification due date. Step two is for qualified bidders to then provide bid assurance collateral in the form of either a letter of credit or cash and the supplier master agreement, again by 12 p.m. noon on the bid assurance collateral and SMA due date. The third step is for bidders to provide their bid proposal spreadsheets, which will be due between 10 a.m. and 12 p.m. Eastern on the bid proposal's due date. So just as a reminder, this presentation goes over items that are consistent between solicitations. To check on specific dates for a given solicitation, please go to the calendars page on the PPL RFP website, and we actually provide the calendar page at the bottom of this slide 14. The RFP manager will then submit a report to the PUC one business day after the bid proposal's due date, and the PUC will issue a decision for all proposals no later than two business days after the bid proposal due date. Two items to note are the following. So the PUC may render its decision for each product in its entirety. So, for example, in a given solicitation, the PUC may choose to accept the results for the 6-month residential product, but reject the results for the 12-month residential product in its entirety. And then the second item that I would like to note is that if the PUC does not render its decision in the affirmative by close of business on the date that is two business days after the bid proposal due date, the results of the RFP will be deemed to be approved. So on slide 16, we go over the rate translation for each of the customer groups. The rates for default service customers will be based on the RFP bid prices. More specifically, for residential customers, the rate will be based on full requirements price contracts, the long-term block product, and the AAC-only contracts from DSP-5. For the small C&I customer group, the rate is based on the full requirements fixed price contract and the AAC-only contracts from DSP-5. And lastly, for the large C&I customer group, the rate is based on the full requirements spot market contracts and the AAC-only contracts that are being procured in DSP-5. Additionally, the rates will also include loss factor adjustments, gross receipt tax, transmission service charge, and state tax adjustment surcharges. So, in the next section of the presentation, I will be talking about the product design in more detail. So, in this default service RFP, there are two components about the product that you need to keep in mind. And these are firstly that it is for full requirements, and secondly that it is load following. So, first, the supply is for full requirement service. That means that it includes energy, capacity, ancillary services, certain transmission services, and some other required products and services. In this DSP-5 program, the service excludes renewable obligations under the AEPS Act and certain non-market-based transmission services. When we say that full requirement services includes certain transmission services, these are defined in the Supplier Master Agreement. They are meant to exclude responsibilities of PPL Electric, who will take on the NITS or the Network Integration Transmission Services, transmission enhancement costs, along with a few other costs that are explained clearly in the SMA. You will receive auction revenue rights, or ARRs, that are associated with the FPR auction in PJM, and these are allocated to winning suppliers. We are also providing on this slide the delivery point, which is the PPL underscore residual underscore aggregate load zone. So, as I mentioned earlier, full requirements service is load following. This means that you are not supplying a fixed megawatt block of energy. Instead, you are responsible for a fixed percentage, otherwise known as a tranche, of default service load for a particular customer group during a 6-month or a 12-month supply period. The fixed percentage will be tied to the number of tranches that you have won. And this load follows the load of default service customers. And just as a reminder, default service customers are free to switch out of default service or back into default service with appropriate notice to PPL Electric. So on slide 19, we go over the payment for each product. So one key item to keep in mind is that whether you are serving load for the residential customer group, the small C&I customer group, or the large C&I customer group, you are providing the same service. The difference rests on how you are going to get paid for that service. As described in the previous slide, you are going to be providing full requirements, load following service. For the residential and small C&I customer groups, you're going to be getting paid the bid price, which is an all-in price for your settlement volume, which is based on the hourly loss-derated load, and you're going to be paid based on a dollar per megawatt hour basis for that load. For the large C&I customer group, you're going to be paid as follows. So you will be paid for your energy at the price that it is paid. That is tied to the PJM real-time spot market. You'll be paid for your capacity at the RPM price, and you'll be paid the rest of the components not associated with energy or capacity, which will include ancillary services, congestion costs, supplier margin, at a fixed price, which will be your bid price on a dollar per megawatt hour basis. On slide 20, we refer to the default service load as residual load, and this especially affects the residential customer group. If you think of the load used by residential customers, you first have to take out the load served by EGSs. that will get you to what is physically known as the default service load. On top of that, for the residential customer group, PPL Electric has a long-term contract with the Allegheny Electric Cooperative for capacity and energy from the New York Power Authority, and this is also known as the NYPA supply. You need to take out the NYPA supply from the load to get the residual load. And then NYPA contract and historical data are available on the RFP website. The second item that needs to get removed is the long-term block supply, which PPL Electric has bought through the default service block supply RFP in the quantities and time periods laid out here on slide 20. So to reiterate, you'll have to reduce the load by this NYPA and block supply to get the residual load that you are following. And just as a reminder, this long-term product applies only to the residential customer group. So moving on to slide 21, I will go over the load caps for the default service RFP. A load cap refers to the maximum number of tranches an RFP bidder can bid on. So there are two types of load caps. The first one is an 85% solicitation load cap based on the number of tranches in each solicitation. And this means that you cannot bid on more than 85% of the available tranches. The second type of load cap is a 50% aggregate load cap, which is based on the percentage of default service load served for a customer group by an RFP bidder at any point in time. This load applies to residential and small CNI customer groups, so not to the large CNI customer group. And this limit on tranches bid in a given solicitation will take into account the percentage of load associated with tranches won by the RFP bidder in prior full requirements RFPs. So the default service RFP has a standard supplier master agreement, or SMA, that has been approved by the commission. The contract will be between a winner of the RFP and PPL Electric, and the contract is non-negotiable, and you must agree to the terms of the SMA prior to submission of the bids. In order to qualify, the RFP bidder uploads a partially executed SMA prior to bid submission. Then transaction confirmations will be populated and completed after the bid process, and the transaction confirmation will specify for winning bidders the product information for the tranches won. So the transaction confirmations will include information such as the price, the delivery term, and the tranches won. For key contract credit provisions, there will be a mark-to-market methodology in play. PPL Electric will grant to suppliers an unsecured credit line based on the credit information provided by the bidder itself or the guarantor through its tangible net worth and credit ratings. Any exposure based on the mark-to-market methodology that exceeds the unsecured credit line granted must be met with cash or a letter of credit. And to be granted an unsecured credit line based on your guarantor's credit or tangible net worth, then you need to ensure that you have an acceptable guarantee in place with PPL Electric. So more information about the specific methodologies to be used are explained in Appendix B to the default service SMA. So moving on to slide 24, there is going to be a single unsecured credit for those of you who have won in previous solicitations for which delivery is still ongoing. Exposures are netted across all SMAs, and there is one single guarantee that is used for all SMAs. Additionally, the standard guarantee and the performance assurance letters of credit forms are provided as exhibits to the contract. So next, I'll pass it on to my colleague, Christian Park, and he'll cover the steps of qualification in further detail.
Thank you, Mr. Ventos. Now I'll go over the qualification and bidding process. The entire qualification process is done completely online. During such qualification process, you will need to provide the required information as instructed and upload signed dependencies and supporting documentation as needed. In order to complete the qualification process, you will need an account for the default service RFP. So if you do not have one yet, you can request an account on the PPL RFP website. Once you request an account, we will provide instructions for you on how to complete and submit the qualification form. Moving on to slide 27, in order to request an account, you can go to the website ppldsp.com, navigate to the qualification form on the left side of the navigation bar, and click Get Account Here. From there, you can fill out the required fields and indicate your interest in the default service RFP. If you already have an account for the default service RFP, you can just click on the link to log in, and you'll be directed to the qualification form. On the ppldsp.com website, you'll find the applicable appendices under the Documents page of the Default Service RFP section. In addition to the appendices that you'll need to sign and upload to your qualification form, you can also find the RFP rules and SMA for the Default Service RFP on this page. If you request an account for the Default Service RFP, an automatic email to activate your account will be sent to the email address entered for that account. Click on the Activate Account link provided in the email to set a password and activate your account. Moving on to slide 31, the qualification form is due on 12 p.m. noon Eastern Prevailing Time on the bidder qualifications due date. In the qualification form, you must complete the sections for Expression of Interest, Confidentiality Agreement, PJM and FERC qualifications, Credit Application and Financial Information, and binding Bid Agreement. Optionally, you can also designate additional representatives and propose modifications to the credit instruments, including the bid assurance letter of credit, performance assurance letter of credit, or guarantee. The expression of interest form will request basic contact information of the RFP bidder and its representatives. This section will also allows the RFP bidder to designate additional representatives. Section 2 requires the upload of the confidentiality agreement, which protects information as confidential and will be executed by both the RFP bidder and PP Electric to protect both parties. Section 3 requires the RFP bidder certifications of both PJM qualification and FERC authorization. The RFP bidder must upload both appendices to certify that the RFP bidder is qualified as a market buyer and seller in PJM and is authorized to sell energy, capacity, and ancillary services. Section 4 is the credit application, which will request the applicant to provide credit documentation, either for the RFP bidder or guarantor. This will include information for credit contact, the most recent 10Q or 10K, credit ratings, and credit authorization. If the RFP bidder is relying on a guarantor, the Appendix 6 credit authorization form must be signed by that guarantor. The RFP bidder has the option to indicate that it is not requesting unsecured credit under the default service SMA. If the RFP bidder is relying on a foreign guarantor, they may provide draft documents required under the default service SMA for evaluation. Moving on to slide 34, we continue on with section 5 of the qualification form, which is the binding bid agreement, which acknowledges that bid proposals are firm offers to supply. The RFP bidder is also certifying that it will be bound by the prices submitted in the bid proposals, is bidding independently with no knowledge of other bids, and has not disclosed any information related to the RFP process prior to the PUC decision. Lastly is a justification of omission section, where RFP bidders can explain any omissions if unable to provide requested documents, or if the RFP bidder wishes to propose modifications to credit instruments. If the RFP bidders have previously qualified for a prior default service RFP solicitation under PP Electric's DSP-5 program, they can have the option of completing an abbreviated qualification process. The qualification form will still be due on 12 p.m. noon Eastern Prevailing Time on the bidder qualifications due date, but RFP bidders only need to provide contact information, credit application, and financial information, either in the form of Appendix 6 or 6B, and resubmit the binding bid agreement. Previously qualified RFP bidders will still have the option to designate additional representatives and propose changes to credit instruments. Appendix 6B may only be used by previously qualified bidders and prior default service RFPs under DSP-5. Applicants can submit Appendix 6B if all previously submitted credit and financial information is current and does not require an update, or if the applicant is only updating credit ratings, support documentation, and or financial statements. Applicants can request their most recent financial information submitted for review. As mentioned previously, RFP bidders can propose non-substantive and clarifying modifications to credit instruments. RFP bidders must submit such proposed modifications in Microsoft Word Redline as additional uploads under the Justification of Omission section of the qualification form. The acceptability of such proposed modifications will be at PP Electric's sole discretion and will be communicated to the RFP bidder no later than 48 hours before the cure deficiency deadline. Lastly, a list of all acceptable modifications to credit instruments will be posted publicly to the RFP website no later than 7 business days before the bid proposal due date. Moving on to slide 38 is the qualification form review process. The RFP manager will only review submissions once the RFP bidder has hit submit, at which point the RFP bidder's account will be locked. The RFP manager will then perform initial evaluations generally on the same business day or the next business day. Both deficient and complete notices will be sent via email and may request additional materials for evaluation. Once the RFP bidder receives a notice from the RFP manager, the account will be unlocked unless the qualification form is deemed complete by the RFP manager. If that's the case, the account will remain locked. RFP bidders are encouraged to submit materials early to maximize time to resolve deficiencies or provide additional information. Any deficiency notice sent by the RFP manager will specify the deadline for RFP bidders to respond by. For the first deficiency notice, RFP bidders will have until 6 p.m. Eastern Prevailing Time on the second following business day to respond. And for any subsequent deficiency notice, RFP bidders must respond by the deadline specified in the deficiency notice. If the RFP bidder fails to remedy the deficiency by the specified deadline, they will not qualify for the solicitation. Moving on to slide 40 is step 2 of the RFP process, which will be the submission of bid assurance collateral and the default service SMA. The due date for these materials is 12 p.m. noon Eastern Prevailing Time on the bid assurance collateral and SMA due date. The first part will be the submission of the online form, which includes the SMA upload. In the online form, RFP bidders must indicate whether they are providing cash or letter of credit as a bid assurance collateral. RFP bidders will also need to upload a signed default service SMA if needed. The second part will be the submission of the bid assurance collateral. If the RFP bidder is using cash, wire transfer instructions will be provided to them. If the RFP bidder is using a letter of credit, there are two options. The first being the electronic letter of credit, or Appendix 7B, which must be emailed to ppelectric_bidlc@ppelweb.com. If the RFP bidder is using the hard copy letter of credit, or Appendix 7A, then it must be delivered to the address shown on this slide 40 here. Moving on to slide 41, the bid assurance collateral in the form of either letter of credit or cash must be provided in an amount equal to $500,000 per tranche. The wire transfer instructions can be made available upon request if the RFP bidder wishes to submit bid assurance collateral in the form of cash. Lastly, standard forms of the letter of credit are available on the RFP website and a few notes. There are two forms of the letter of credit available, one that allows for the hard copy delivery and the other for electronic issuance and presentation of documents. Please be sure to use only the standard form or the standard form with acceptable modifications. Another reminder to submit materials early to provide time to deal with corrections. Lastly, the final lists of acceptable modifications will be posted no later than 7 business days before the bid proposal due date. Existing SMAs under DSP 4 or earlier will not be accepted for use. And one signed copy of the entire default service SMA must be received by upload to the RFP website, including the form of notice filled in with the appropriate contact information. RFP bidders that have previously submitted a default service SMA under DSP 5 do not need to do so again unless they are providing any updates. The third and final step of the RFP process will be the submission of bid proposals. The bid proposal due date is between 10 a.m. and 12 p.m. noon Eastern Prevailing Time on the bid proposal due date. There is one bid proposal spreadsheet for each product, which means there are separate spreadsheets for the residential, small commercial and industrial, and large commercial and industrial products. All shaded cells in the spreadsheets must be completed, and the bid proposal spreadsheets must be submitted online by the secure bid transfer platform. Following the submission of bid proposal spreadsheets, the RFP manager will endeavor to call back within 60 minutes to confirm receipt. For each product, only the last submitted bid proposal spreadsheet will count for evaluation purposes. Now I'll hand it off to Ms. Yuan to talk further about the bid proposal process.
Thank you, Mr. Park. Now we'll go over the bid proposal spreadsheets. Each bid proposal spreadsheet will have these shaded cells, and all shaded cells have to be filled. The bidder needs to either provide a price for the total number of tranches it wishes to supply, or enter an X for the total number of tranches the bidder doesn't want to supply. In this example, the bidder provides $75.25 per megawatt hour for one total tranche supplied, $75.50 for two total tranches supplied, and $75.75 for three total tranches supplied. The bidder indicated an X in the price column for 4, 5, and 6 total tranches supplied, indicating that he or she is not willing to supply this amount of total tranches. Please note that the price for each bidder that is providing is, for example, one total tranche supplied, two total tranches supplied, etc. So the bidder is not providing a price for the first tranche, the second tranche, or the third tranche. In the following slide, we'll go over bid submission online. The bid proposal spreadsheet will be submitted online via secure bid transfer to the PPL Electric Secure Server. A password used to access the secure bid transfer system will be sent to each qualified bidder with notification of qualification. If a bid proposal spreadsheet is submitted more than once for a product, the last bid proposal spreadsheet submitted for a product supersedes all previous submissions for that product. Therefore, all earlier submissions will not be considered. On slide 46, in the case if the bid assurance collateral is insufficient to support a number of tranches bidded in the bid proposal spreadsheet, bids will be modified. The RFP manager will first determine the maximum amount of whole tranches that the amount of the bid assurance collateral can support, and then remove the unsupported number of tranches first from the product that has the most competition, as measured by the ratio of the number of tranches bid to the number of tranches needed. When the bid is submitted to the RFP manager, the RFP bidder is providing the authorization to modify bid proposal spreadsheets in accordance with this rule. In the next slide, we'll discuss the load caps. So there will be two types of load caps, which are the solicitation load cap and the aggregate load cap. The RFP manager will enforce the solicitation load cap first and then the aggregate load cap. To enforce the solicitation load cap, the RFP manager will check whether if sum of maximum number of tranches offered for product in a customer group exceeds the solicitation load cap. If the solicitation load cap is violated, then the RFP manager will first determine the greatest amount of whole tranches that the RFP bidder is allowed to bid without violating the solicitation load cap, and then remove tranches first from the product where there is the most competition. Next, on the next slide, after enforcing the solicitation load cap, the RFP manager will look at the aggregate load cap. The RFP manager will look at whether bidders have bid in such a way that could cause the bidder to serve more than 50% of the full requirements default service load at any time during June 1st, 2021 to May 31st, 2025. If the RFP bidder submit bids that violate the aggregate load cap, the RFP manager will remove tranches first from the product where there is the most competition. Once the RFP manager confirms that the bid assurance collateral is sufficient and there's no violation of any type of load cap, the RFP manager will then proceed and evaluate the bids. More details on bid evaluation will be demonstrated in the next slide. On slide 49, bids will be evaluated at a price-only basis, and the RFP manager will look at all combinations of bids. Winning bids will be those with the lowest combination average price. On slide 50, we'll provide an example of bid evaluation and demonstrate how that works. On slide 50, in this example, there are two bidders and the target quantity is three total tranches. Looking from left to right, the first two tables show individual bids from bidder A and bidder B. In the table on the far left, we can see bidder A's bids for one total tranche supplied, two total tranches supplied, and three total tranches supplied. Similarly, we can see bidder B's bids in the table right in the middle. There are four types of combination to meet our target three tranches. The RFP manager can either take all bids from bidder B, which gives a combination average price of $76.75, which is essentially bidder B's bids for three total tranches supplied. Or the RFP manager can take one tranche from bidder A and two tranches from bidder B, which gives an cap value of $75.50. Or the RFP manager can take two tranches from A and one tranche from B, which gives a combination average price of $75.83. Finally, the last combination is taking all three tranches from bidder A, which gives a cap value of $76.50. After looking at all these four combinations and their individual combination average price, the RFP manager sees that the second combination yields the lowest cap value, which is $75.50. Therefore, the second combination is known as the winning combination. Please note that the cap value is calculated for selection of the winning combination only, which means that this is not the price that bidder A or bidder B gets. Instead, bidder A gets $75 per megawatt hour for one total tranche supplied, and bidder B gets $75.75 per megawatt hour for two total tranches supplied. On slide 51, again, a guide on how to submit the bid proposal spreadsheet will be available on the RFP website. Qualified bidders will have an opportunity to practice the bid submission process during bidder training. This is when bidders can practice submitting bids. Participation information will be provided by the RFP manager on or before the qualified bidder's notified date. On slide 52, if the RFP bidder faces any technical difficulties, the bidder can email the RFP manager at ppl-procurement@nera.com. The RFP manager will find an alternative method for the bidder to submit bids. The RFP manager encourages all bidders to call at the first instance of any technical difficulty so that a bidder will have more time to submit bids in the alternative method as instructed. Whichever method the bidder uses, whether using the conventional method or the backup method in the case of an emergency, bids will not be disadvantaged. However, all bids must be submitted by the deadline. Next, we will go over post-auction activities. After the bid window has closed, the RFP manager will go through the process of bid evaluation and determine the winning combination. Then the RFP manager will contact winners by the end of business day on bid date. If the results are approved by the PUC, the winners will expect a notification via email from PPL Electric, who will email a partially executed transaction confirmation and a fully executed default service SMA to the winning RFP bidders. This will take place on the same business day when the PUC renders its decision. By 2 p.m. on the second business day after receipt, the RFP bidder will have to provide a fully executed transaction confirmation form, have it signed by an officer, and email it back to PPL Electric. If the RFP bidder fails to do so, then the bid assurance collateral will be forfeited. Upon receipt of fully executed transaction confirmation from PPL Electric, PPL Electric will then return bid assurance collateral. On slide 54, for suppliers are required to create the PJM eSuite short name if they have not done so in prior auctions. This only happens when the supplier wins a new product and the new product has not previously won by the supplier, or in the instance where the short name may no longer be active. PPL Electric will communicate what the short name is to the supplier. PPL Electric will look at full six characters the PJM allows to use and then create the six letters. First three letters are open to the supplier's determination. The supplier must set the PJM short name up. Once they're established through the PJM system, the supplier will notify PPL Electric, of which PPL Electric will enter it into the system. The RFP bidder do not need to provide executed PJM Declaration of Authority, which is also known as a DOA, prior to bid submission. The PJM DOA will be executed by new winning suppliers and PPL Electric after short names are set up. On the next slide, PPL will enter winning supplier contract into PJM in schedule application. PPL Electric will notify the winning supplier when the contract is ready for review and approval. The supplier would then need to approve the contracts in this tool. The contracts entered into the system should match the terms and conditions of the underlying supply contracts. Once contracts are approved, PPL will update and add any billing line item adjustments. BLIs follow the load associated with a short name. PPL Electric will notify the suppliers once BLIs are ready for review, of which then suppliers will review and approve all BLIs entered into the PJM system. Any questions about the PJM in schedule application and the PJM short name DOA should be promptly communicated to PPL Electric. Then moving on to slide 57, as a reminder, the RFP website is www.ppldsp.com. Prospective bidders can register to the mailing list by going to the website, click on the contacts tab on the navigation bar, and then click register, fill in the required fields, and hit submit. For those that are already registered to the mailing list, if there are new information that requires an update, simply email the new information to ppl-procurement@nero.com. On slide 58, please note that the RFP website is the central source of information for all RFPs under PPL Electric's default service program, which includes the RFP rules, the SMAs, and the sample exhibits, credit instruments, bid proposal spreadsheets, and training materials. The RFP manager will also provide updated data, such as the historical load data. This includes the historical hourly load data for both default service customers and load that includes shopping customers. As well, in addition, there are also data regarding bill, sales, and counts, NIPA supply data and NIPA contract, PJM duration factors, daily ICAP and NIST tag data, as well as capacity and NSPL data. On slide 59, there is a screenshot on the Ask a Question page, which is a platform where the RFP bidder can submit questions on documents and data to the RFP manager. During and throughout the solicitation, there is an active FAQ process. Under this process, the RFP manager will confirm the receipt of a question, work on the responses of the question within 2 business days to turn around, and respond to question via email. Once a question has been answered, the RFP manager will post the question and the answer to the FAQ section of the website. This ensures all bidders to have the fair share of information on this RFP, not just the bidders who have asked the questions. Before asking a question, the bidder may want to check the FAQ section of the website to see whether the question has already been addressed. Lastly, on slide 60, if there are any questions, please submit the question using the link provided on this slide, or you can email the RFP manager team at ppl-procurement@nero.com. With that, we'll conclude the presentation. Thank you.